Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Joan Steiniger. Welcome, Joan. It's great to have you with me.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
We begin with some of your origin story, and we start right at the beginning. So, Joan, where were you born?
I was born in Chesapeake, Virginia, which is just south of Virginia Beach.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
There were seven of us. Two of my siblings have passed away, and I am fifth out of the seven.
And was that part of Virginia the home area for some of your family, parents, grandparents?
Yes. My mother's family were Amish, and they moved there from Holmes County, Ohio, and my father's family was Mennonite, and they moved down from Pennsylvania. So yes, most of my family lived there.
And is it safe to say that a number of them are still there?
Oh, yes. All my siblings are there. There's a small Mennonite community in Chesapeake, a church. When I was growing up, it was very much a farming community.
So what do you do for fun in the summertime when you're growing up in Virginia?
Well, we lived in the country. There was a big pond across the road from us, so we went swimming every day. I was one of the three little girls in the family, so we played outdoors all the time. We dressed up our dolls and played jump rope and whatever it was to do. And we worked a lot. We had a big garden, and you know, as families did, so we were always involved in that too.
And was your father a farmer, or what was his profession?
No, my father grew up farming. He said he was not doing that the rest of his life. He worked in the Merchant Marine shipyards. He was a coppersmith and a pipe fitter.
Are there any interesting stories that you remember that he came home telling you about that?
Well, he was a real scavenger. He brought lots and lots of things home from the ships that they were discarding. So we had lots of things in the house that were made from ships. There was one scary story. He came home one Friday and got very sick. He was very sick all weekend. He had been working in the boiler room of a ship, and he went back to work on Monday, and the man he had been working with had died. And it was apparently some kind of chemical that was there in the boiler room. So that was not funny, but, you know, very scary to all of us kids, too, to know that he had that exposure.
We're going to jump ahead. Did you go to public school?
I went to a Mennonite school that the church actually still runs through sixth grade. And then in seventh grade, I went to middle school, a public middle school.
And what church was this?
Mount Pleasant Mennonite Church.
Was it a big change when you moved from that private school, which I'm assuming might have been relatively small, to the bigger one? Do you remember?
It was. My older siblings had already attended public school. So, I was familiar with the routines and that sort of thing. It was scary finding my way around, you know, and getting used to having a locker and a homeroom. And then you moved around from class to class. So, yeah, you know, little country girl, it was intimidating.
And as you were getting into high school, were there certain things that were starting to be of interest to you? Maybe certain subjects or sports or extracurricular activity kinds of things?
I've always loved to be outdoors. I would rather do anything outdoors than anything indoors, actually. And so I loved to garden with my mother, but I had my own boat, just a little rowboat, and I took it out on the big pond across the road from us all the time. I loved to walk in the woods, and those are things that have kind of stuck with me all my life.
Tell me about this little boat. Where did you get it? Did someone make it for you?
My father built it. My father knew so much about boats. He would build all of the small boats that we ever had. So it was kind of like a skiff. And I would just take it out and paddle around, look at the snakes and the frogs and whatever else was out there, and fished. I did a lot of fishing.
And after high school, what came next for you?
After high school came college. I had a scholarship at Old Dominion University, which is in Norfolk. And so I lived at home for 2 years and went to Old Dominion for 2 years. And then I transferred to Eastern Mennonite University, which was Eastern Mennonite College at the time, and finished my degree at EMU. And then I went into VS for a year.
So I'm assuming that by the time you got to college, at least at some point during college, you had decided what you wanted to study. Tell me about how you came to that decision.
What I wanted to be was a naturalist, which was so unrealistic that I did give up on that. I loved to read and I loved English. And so I chose one of those majors that didn't do me a great deal of good. I had an English major. I had always thought that I would go into journalism maybe, but I started working in the public libraries when I was 16. And I loved the libraries. And so I sort of stayed with that. Eventually, instead of heading towards journalism, I became an elementary school librarian. that was what I did. That was for my career.
What was it about libraries that intrigued you?
I love to read, and I think the orderliness of libraries made sense to me. You should always be able to figure out where what you're looking for is. But I think it is primarily the lure of books, of an endless supply of books.
And was there a certain part of the library that was your favorite, like the children's section or fiction? Or
as an adult reader, I read a lot of fiction. I like biographies and autobiographies and that kind of thing, but I don't read a lot of other nonfiction. So I would say that the fiction section is my favorite. Children's books, certainly, because that was my career for 20 years. But I read mostly adult fiction.
Tell me a little bit about going to college at Old Dominion.
Old Dominion is a big state university. At the time I was there, I think we already had 15,000 students. I think they're up more around 25,000 now. So I was a lost little person in with these swarms of other students. It was very interesting. I met a lot of people, but my family was very, or my father in particular, was very strict, and I was not allowed to socialize with non-Mennonites. And so it was a kind of a lonely existence because I mostly went to school and I was still working at the library. And so I went to school and worked and studied, and that's kind of what I did. I think it was really good for me, a good exposure for me, coming off the farm and just learning to be around lots of different kinds of people.
Did you understand why your father said he didn't want you associating with people who weren't Mennonites?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't attend a conservative Mennonite church, but it was a fairly conservative Mennonite church. And it was all about being worldly and not being part of the world. And I'm sure the fear was that I would marry one of them. And so that was the reason.
You and I understand when you say worldly, but we have some listeners who may not even have a clue what that means. Can you explain that just a bit?
Sure. There are verses in the Bible, and a lot of churches tend to focus on certain ones like that to say, be separate from the world, be apart from the world. And what it's talking about is the values of the world and not being drawn to the foolishness or the greed or all of the negative things that are out there. And I think that's what the Mennonite church at that time, at least the one I attended, that's what worldly was anything that drew us to the outside world. TVs were worldly. We didn't have a phone till I was 14. We never cut our hair, that kind of thing. Never went to movies, never wore makeup. Those were all worldly.
No dancing.
No. Heavens no dancing.
And at that time in your life, say in college, were you okay with that?
No. What happened, the reason I went to EMU is I finally said to my mother, I don't have a life. All I do is work and go to school, and I'm not allowed to date anybody. Either I'm going to go to a Mennonite school or I'm going to date, we call them outsiders, which is a terrible term. And she caved in and convinced my father, because my parents didn't really think that girls need to get educated. Remember, this was a long time ago, Gloria. I'm pretty old. So it was a big jump for them that I went to college at all.
Had some of your siblings gone?
No.
You were the first one?
Yes. I was the only one.
How did that even happen?
I had a wonderful high school counselor that my parents had a lot of respect for her. She was well known in the community, and they really thought highly of her. And she talked to them and said that with my grades, and I mean, my grades were no better than my older sister's, but they were good, that I should be going to college. And I wanted to so badly. And then I got a scholarship so I could go basically for free if I lived at home. So that was probably the deciding factor was. Then when I transferred to EMU, my parents did loan me some money, which of course I paid back.
So when you got to EMC, and we're going to call it that because that's what it was, Eastern Mennonite College in Harrisonburg, Virginia, were you then living in a dorm or were you still commuting? I'm not sure what that distance is.
The distance would be about 4.5 hours, not possible. So yes, I lived in the dorm. It was a great experience. Again, coming off the farm and isolated at Old Dominion University. And my first college roommate is still one of my very dear friends. We still stay in touch. When I go back to Colorado, I try to see her. It was a hoot. It was a lot of fun. For an introvert, I really, actually really enjoyed living in the dorm.
And did you feel a bit more freedom to just talk to people and be part of the community at that point, the college community?
Sure. And colleges, or especially that particular college, had ways of creating community for the young people that came in. So I was part of a Bible study. I was part of a group that went out and visited different churches. So those things created community for me that I didn't even know I missed beforehand.
Did you start dating?
Yes, sure.
We won't get too far into that, but just good to know. You said you ended up with an English degree, just as did I, we might add, from Goshen College. But you said then you went into VS, with which Mennonite organization? I assume Mennonite. Tell me a bit about that.
I think it was Mennonite Mission Board. I would assume it was Mennonite Mission Board. And I went to Colorado, and I worked as a secretary for a residential treatment center for emotionally disturbed boys. It was actually how I met Phil, because he had also been in VS there. His term was finished, but he was living in Colorado Springs with some friends and still hung out with the VS unit kids, and that's how we met.
This was a one-year assignment?
Yes.
Again, did you live like in a group setting?
Yes, we had a VS house. And it was one of the largest VS units in the country at the time. I think we had 12 or 15 VSers there, because they were care workers at the same treatment facility where I worked. So there were a lot of us. And there was a lot of coming and going, because they would work shifts. And so they'd be gone for a couple of days and then there for a couple of days. And so there was a lot of commotion. It was fun.
Did you just live in one house, or what was the housing arrangement?
Yes. We had one big house in Colorado Springs.
That's a big house.
It was a big house. And it was about a 40-minute drive from Frontier Boys Village, which is the facility. So some of us drove every day, the day staff like myself, and some of the guys would live there.
And was this organization that you were working with, was that somehow related to the Mennonites, or had the Mennonites founded it?
Yes, the Mennonites owned it. They owned and operated Frontier Boys Village for, I don't even know, maybe 15 or 20 years.
So a lot of volunteers passed through there.
Oh, yes. Yes, lots. Mm-hmm. In fact, enough of us stayed in Colorado that we wound up starting a new church.
So what was your actual assignment, and what might a typical day have looked like at that point?
I was a receptionist. So I answered the phone, did a lot of paperwork. Those are the days of the old hand crank mimeograph machines. So things were a lot more labor intensive than they are now. And then because of my English background, when the caseworkers discovered that I could write and spell and all those things, I started writing their reports. I started attending all the case meetings about the kids and writing. I'd take their notes and write up all the reports. And then they just had to go through and make any corrections they wanted to and then sign them. So they were happy to have somebody who had some English background.
And then did you get to type them up as well?
Oh, yes. With carbons. Remember carbons?
Carbon paper.
Yes.
Making mistakes made corrections challenging.
Oh, it was so aggravating, wasn't it?
So did you meet Phil during that year?
Yes. He was living in Colorado Springs with some other former care workers and VSers. And we used to hang out together all the time. So that's how I met him, yes.
As a group, or as a unit, as we used to call it, what kinds of things were you doing just together as a group of young people when you weren't working? Well, first of all, you were in a new part of the country.
Mm-hmm. I loved Colorado. We did a lot of camping, so we had no money. You know, we were making the first year I made $15 a month, and the second year I made $20. Oh, no. No, that's right, because I didn't stay the second year. That's right. Phil wasn't in for 2 years.
Say that again, $15 a month,
yes.
Right?
And then if you stayed a second year, I said that wrong. If you stayed a second year, as Phil did, then you made $25 a month. Big bucks. So we did things that were cheap. We did a lot of bike riding, loved to ride bike, camped a lot. We would go skiing. In those days, you could ski for $8 a day. Can you imagine? And so we would save up so we could all pack into a vehicle and drive up and go skiing. So that was another thing we did that was fun.
How did you learn to ski?
Oh my, I learned to ski at EMC. It was more like ice skating, really. My friends and I would go, and at that time you could go and do evening skiing for $4. And so we would go and rent some Shackley equipment and ski for 4 hours. It was terrible. It's a wonder we didn't kill ourselves. But
Colorado has real mountains.
It was real skiing.
So you finished your year, and what was happening at that point for you in your life?
Well, by then Phil and I had gotten engaged. So I came home for a couple months to get ready for the wedding. Learned to bake pies since I couldn't cook at all. And I figured if I could make pies, he wouldn't care, which is probably true. Then we were married. I came home the end of August. We were married the end of September. Yeah, I think I was just home a month. And then we moved back out to Colorado Springs. Phil had a job at a plumbing and heating wholesaler. And I just started looking for, wound up teaching preschool, which I loved. And I made $1.90 an hour.
The big bucks. How was it being that far away from home and deciding to kind of establish a home there? Was there any sense of freedom of maybe I can do things differently? Tell me a bit about how your beliefs maybe started to be influenced or maybe not.
I think certainly the couple years I'd had away from home had made a big impact on me. Phil and I, we both loved Colorado, and we had lots of our friends, our VS friends were still living there in the area. And so there was a big group of us that just kind of became family to each other. Most of us were young married couples. Phil had a job. I found a job. We always talked about at some point we'd move closer to family, but we loved it there. And the opportunities that came up didn't work out. And I'm really glad that we stayed. It was a great place to raise kids.
And where was Phil from?
Phil is from northern Indiana, north of the Fort Wayne area in Auburn, Indiana. And he actually didn't grow up Mennonite, but he had friends who were Mennonite, and they had talked about doing voluntary service as their 1W. And that's a term, if you're not familiar with it, is alternate to military service. So Phil's number was coming up in the draft. And so he joined the VS program instead.
And you said that you actually started a church there in Colorado Springs. Tell me about that.
Yes. After Phil and I had been married for a year, we moved north of Colorado Springs about 30 miles to a little town called Palmer Lake, which was about 6 or 7 miles from Frontier Boys Village. And there were a number of us who had worked at Frontier Boys Village or still did who were living in Palmer Lake. And we were driving into Bethel Mennonite Church in Colorado Springs, which is only 35 minutes probably. But there were enough of us that lived in that community that sort of had a heart to start a sister church up there or a satellite church. And Bethel was pretty big at that time and pretty packed out. And so even though it was a very difficult decision for the church to see 27 adults and 29 children leave to start a new church, they were very supportive. And that church is actually still going.
What's the name of it?
Mountain Community Mennonite Church, and it's in Palmer Lake.
What was it like to try to start a church or to start a church?
It was a huge amount of work, but at that age, most of us were in our 20s, early 30s, young children. So we had so much in common, and we had worked together at Frontier Boys Village. So we had long friendships. There was so much energy and so much excitement, enthusiasm about starting this church and writing the Constitution or the articles of whatever ourselves so that we could incorporate some things that were a little bit different. There was just so much passion in starting a church. I know that for Bethel, it felt very different because they were the ones that got left behind in a sense. But the churches have stayed close, I think. It was a lot of work, lots of meetings.
And were you reaching out into the community as you were getting established, or was it still pretty much just the folks who knew each other, Mennonite heritage kind of thing?
It was a lot of that, although we really welcomed new people. I think our primary outreach, which was pretty successful, was a summer Bible school program. And we did it different ways, different years, but that seemed to bring people into the church because the children were there, so then they felt comfortable to come in. But I will say that that church never did really grow into the community. Part of it is the Air Force Academy is just south of there, and it's a very big military presence. There are bases in Colorado Springs, there are bases in Denver. And so to have a pacifist church planted in that community, we already had sort of walls up.
So that was a challenging location just geographically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you change jobs when you moved to Palmer Lake?
Yes. So I worked as a preschool teacher, teacher's aide, and then a teacher for about 3 years. And after the first year, we moved to Palmer Lake. So I was driving back and forth to Colorado Springs with Phil. We could carpool. We weren't very far apart. So that worked out. But I was getting kind of tired of the commute, and Frontier Boys Village offered me a part-time job as cook and a couple of other responsibilities I had. So I did that for a couple years, and then the Mennonite Church decided to sell Frontier Boys Village, and so I was going to be out of a job anyway, and then I got pregnant, so it all worked out. So then I didn't work for about 4.5 years.
Well, you worked, but not outside the home.
Not outside the home. That's right. Yes, I work for sure.
I can't help but notice the irony. You told us a few minutes ago that you couldn't cook, and then you just told us that you got hired as a cook. What happened in between there?
Well, when you cook for an institution, you have these giant cookbooks in all these directions. So y'all, if you can read, you can cook. And I also learned to cook the hard way, but I did learn to cook.
So you had your first child, and was the plan for you to stay home and be an at-home wife and mother? Or at some point, were you planning to get back out into some kind of outside employment?
The plan was that I would stay home while the children were tiny, and then I would find a job again. We had three children in less than 4 years, so we got right to it. And I loved those years. I loved babies. I loved being home with my little guys. But when Ben, our youngest, was in his last year of preschool, I had been volunteering at the school where my children attended in the library, and the librarian was moving on. And so the principal came to me. She knew my library background, and she asked me if I was interested in taking over the library. So when Ben was in kindergarten, I started that job, and then I was a school librarian for 20 years, which I loved.
Is there a certain grade of student that you enjoyed more than others as they spent time in the library?
I think I liked the younger ones better. They weren't blasé and cynical. You know, they loved everything, and I could share literature with them, and then they enjoyed it as much as I did. I definitely liked the little ones best.
And as a librarian, I assume that you got to decide, at least had a say, a big say, in which books the library actually got.
Yes, I did. There were three elementary schools in our district, so there was a head librarian over all of those, and so I was one of the librarians under her. And she had quite a bit of say, too, but I would go through the catalogs and pick out what I thought we wanted, and she almost always just rubber-stamped it. Yes, I had a lot of say.
This is a really unfair question, but that never stops me. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite children's book or author?
Well, my favorite children's chapter book is Charlotte's Web. One of my favorite children's books I shared a couple of weeks ago in church for the children's story was the one where I knocked over my iPad. It's called The Three Astronauts, and it's really about how people are all alike under the skin and that we all have the same feelings. And so that really stands out to me as an unusual book, but I tried real hard not to collect children's books because I read thousands of children's books and it was easier just to put them all. But I collected beautiful nativity books, especially if they had really gorgeous illustrations, and I collected dragon books, which now my 5-year-old grandson loves. So those would be some of my favorites.
I had never heard the Three Astronauts story before, so we heard that the other Sunday. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, you didn't actually quite hear it because I had to shorten it a lot. So it's you heard a version of it.
You told the story.
I told the story. I had to because it would have been way too long.
Well, at some point, you made your way to Oregon. Were there some stops between Colorado and Oregon that we should know about?
Yes, we lived in Colorado for 35 years. And then Phil and I both took early retirement. He had managed a water and sanitation district for 25 years. And we joined MCC. We went to Canada for 3 years. St. Catharines is just north of Buffalo, New York, so very close to the falls. And we managed a big thrift store for MCC there for 3 years, which is fascinating. Wonderful people there. Had a great time there. And then we accepted a second assignment that was in Kentucky, Hindman, Kentucky, which is in the Eastern Highlands. And we organized groups of people who came down, volunteers who would come down to do home repairs for low-income families. We loved Appalachia. It was an incredible assignment. Met so many wonderful people, learned the culture of Appalachia. And at that point, when our second assignment ended, our first biological grandchild was coming, and our kids said, they were all in the Northwest by then. They said, why would you go back to Colorado? We want you out here. We want our son to have grandparents in his life. And so we thought, too, yeah, why would we? Why don't we come out here? So we moved out to Camas, Washington, and then Asa was born just 3 weeks before we got out here. And we've always been his child care. It's just been such a joy. We've had the best time. And then, of course, our older son and his wife moved back to Colorado. So now they're not all out here anymore. But our daughter and her husband and her stepdaughter live in Seattle. So we have a granddaughter as well, whom we haven't seen very much of because of COVID, but we're going to be going up there again soon.
Good. So what year did you actually move out here?
We moved out in 2015. right after Asa was born. So Asa is now 5 and a half.
And you somehow ended up at Portland Mennonite. How did that happen?
Well, we were living outside Camas. We moved to St. Helens 2.5 years ago when our kids moved here so that we could be close. And we had wanted a historical peace church, weren't set on it being Mennonite. And we were hoping to find one that was close to us. Well, where we lived, nothing was close to us. We lived way out in the country. So we went to Vancouver First Friends for about a year, but found that the Friends Church, at least that Friends Church, was no longer really focusing on a peace witness. They were pretty God and country. And we just didn't get connected there. So we had been to Portland Mennonite once, and you know the distance was a little daunting, but we just I pretty much said, I want to go back and try that again. And so we did, and have graduated, you know, have fit in and feel very connected now. We have a wonderful small group that we love dearly and have gotten pretty involved.
Yes, like you do the children's story sometimes, which is always wonderful. So thank you on behalf of the congregation for that important piece of our worship. And now that things are opening up again, we might actually be able to meet in person. Are you up for making that drive again?
Oh, yes. Yes, we're definitely coming back. We've been helping Ed Shirk and Bruce Coons with landscape work in the parking lot. And Phil and I do all the mowing and trimming and that kind of thing at the church. So we traipse back and forth quite a bit. Yes, we can't wait to come back.
As we're wrapping up, what is something about you that's important to you and that we probably don't know about you?
One of the things I do that sets my day is I love to hike, and I like to hike alone. And so there are a number of tracts of Weyerhaeuser timberland not too far from us. And so every morning I do about a 5-mile hike, and it's my meditation time, it's my prayer time. But I really, really miss it when I don't get time alone out in the woods.
And now that the weather's getting better and the pandemic is winding down, there's even more freedom.
Yes, yes. We have friends coming Friday night from Colorado to visit. It's just so nice to be able to say, stay with us.
Joan, thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your story with us.
Well, thank you for having me. How fun.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.